Let's talk about the future of news.
I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news.
The state of journalism today.
Telling both sides of a controversial story.
I think we must be unbiased.
It's honesty, fairness, truth.
That is our job. That is our job. That is our job. That is our job.
Just been watching a TV program about transgenderism, and we need to talk about framing in journalism and how it works. Framing is a term we use in journalism when we decide what you could call the terms of reference for a story, whether it be on the TV or the radio or in print. It means setting the scene within certain parameters, and perhaps the most famous and basic one is the one that's used to illustrate what is news and what is not. Dog bites man is an everyday occurrence, while man bites dog gets the front page. Even at that, we can frame that story in a number of ways, even though the essential facts remain the same. So you could frame it as the man as a hero biting a dog to ward it off and save people, or as a madman attacking a defenseless animal. That's the very, very basic concept of framing. The first editorial decision that you make is often whether or not to cover a story at all. The second is how it is framed, and every story is framed in some way. An example would be that outside of Britain at the moment, the rest of Europe is framing Brexit as a sort of a meaningless act of madness by an out-of-control political class who are hell-bent on making some sort of bizarre ideological point, regardless of what the catastrophic effects are going to be. Outside of America, Donald Trump is either seen as a madman, or in places like Brazil, he's being seen as a conservative saviour who will bring back the best of times. The framing is usually decided between the editor and the journalist, or the lead reporter if it happens to be a team effort. Presenting a story idea to an editor is called making a pitch, and the pitch will usually contain the strongest elements of the story and how they will be framed and then illustrated in that story. Sometimes framing is in your face and undeniable, but it's often very, very subtle. For instance, Irish media is often loath to say anything at all that is even remotely positive about British rule in Northern Ireland because it would provoke a massive and vitriolic response. This evening's RTE primetime programme on transgenderism was an ambitious piece of broadcasting that probably never should have made it off the production team whiteboard. I deliberately watch it as a media consumer rather than as someone obsessed with media and journalism and somebody running this podcast, so I didn't actually make notes throughout it on the timeline or anything else like that, but I did immediately notice that the issue was to be presented, transgenderism itself was to be presented as a problem that needs to be dealt with rather than something that needs to be explained and learned about. That happened very, very early in the show. In framing, it's also very helpful to have conflict, because then you have the joy of framing both sides in different ways. This gives the illusion of balance, and if somebody criticises you, well then you can always say, hey, I was only putting it out there. But doing this abdicates the responsibility for the choices that you make as a journalist. Why do you choose to get certain people to talk about certain issues? If they're academics, it's not enough to just list their credentials. You need to put them in the context of their field. What have they done that has been reviewed by their peers and is respected in that field? And if they make claims that they were discouraged from doing specific research, as was the case with one of the academics on primetime, did you check to see that that was in fact the case, or did you just take them at their word? This is a very important point, because at the moment we have this attack on universities that you're not allowed to say anything, that they're trying to create safe spaces for people and they're not doing certain research. I know people very close to me who've had research grants torn down for certain things, and they always take it personally, and they always take it in some way as being silenced or as not being listened to. That's why academics are so passionate about their subjects, and if they don't get to research them, or if they're sort of said, well, you know, maybe this isn't the best thing to be researching in this particular way at this particular time, they tend to throw their toys out of the pram. That then can be used as an attack on the university or the seat of learning in question to say they're being silenced, when in fact maybe their framing just doesn't make any sense. When you allow people to speak on camera, it doesn't absolve you from the responsibility of fact-checking what they say. And the stronger the accusation they make, the heavier the responsibility. The primetime programme this evening started off by talking about basically an explosion in the number of young people wanting to change gender in Ireland, when in fact that number has decreased. Now, there's not a whole lot of statistics available over the last 3 years, but it has undeniably decreased. There was also the spectre of both mental health and the danger to women of people with male genitalia being in women-only spaces. These two things were also raised. The mental health aspect in particular I found extremely spurious. There was no rigorous examination of why transgender people suffer from mental health issues, and this left a viewer with a very foggy view of how the two are related, nor was there any mention whatsoever of the austerity in the UK and Ireland, which has seen these services almost eliminated. There are huge waiting lists for these times, but for these types of services, but this was never examined, right? Why do people with gender dysphoria feel the need to visit these mental health services? Is it because they are transgender, or is it because they are not receiving the help they need for this transgenderism? None of this seemed to be explored in any substantive manner. Violence against women in male spaces is a very troubling issue, but only one high-profile example was given on the show, as well as an explanation from the Irish Prison Service about how they deal with the issue, and they say basically it's up to the courts. So it gives you this idea that this is a huge issue, and it's like any issue of violence. Anybody who has been subjected to this, or anybody who's felt the fear of being in that position, believes it to be all-pervasive, but is it as big a question as what is made out to be? Is it a problem for the Irish Prison Service? Again, this wasn't really explored. We were never told the number of prisoners who'd even applied to the courts to change gender, or maybe to change whatever prison they were being kept in. I find the public debate in general around transgender issues to be extremely narrow and occasionally too vitriolic for my liking. It's something I'd like to learn more about, but discussing it in public tends to attract, kind of like the abortion issue or the same-sex marriage or anything else like that, it just attracts all the worst people, and it's not something that you do want to do. Anything useful I've learned has been gleaned from people in private conversations with academics, with transgender spokespeople and organisations, or with the families of transgender people tend to be very open and willing to talk about it. But this brings me back to my original point. There are two kinds of journalism that are particularly insidious at the moment, and unhelpfully they are the two strands that attract the most viewers, readers and listeners. Many people would have tuned in to this primetime show this evening just to hear what Graham Linehan had to say. The first of these kinds of journalism is the just asking questions kind, which I have previously described as the greatest moral cowardice in modern media. If you're just asking questions, you need to own the fucking answers that are going to come out of that process. You need to see it all the way through to the bitter end. You do not just get to open Pandora's box and then walk away from the consequences, especially when these consequences are not the kind of thing that are going to affect you personally. The other kind of journalism that is extremely insidious at the moment is the Hear Them Out Brigade, and it is particularly prevalent in the rise of the far right in Europe and the US at the moment. This is the school of thought that says, let's meet them and defeat them in the marketplace of ideas, and you will inevitably find that those recommending this meeting and defeating are never the targets of racists or misogynists or homophobes or anything else. There is never a danger to them personally, and there's no cost to them, but they will insist that minorities put themselves in the firing line to satisfy the throwaway intellectual curiosity of those in the cheap seats, and by that I mean both the audience and the journalists themselves. So how should journalism deal with issues like transgenderism? Again, I go back to the research done by Whitney Phillips, whom I spoke to on a previous podcast about the rise of the far right and how we should deal with the issues they bring up. As soon as you start speaking about people, or a class of people, or a group of people, you need to put them in the centre of your reporting immediately. You do not get to tell their stories for them, and you do not get to allow others to do so. You allow them to tell their stories themselves, a principle that you can refer to as nothing about us, without us. Because as a journalist, your framing of any issue is going to be intrinsically flawed, and it will not automatically be balanced by someone just giving the other side. Take myself as an example. I'm 47, I went to a Catholic school in Ireland, and I now live in a liberal secular democracy. No matter how hard I try, I will never be able to see the world through the eyes of a 15-year-old black child born in Sweden to immigrant parents, or to a child experiencing gender dysphoria. As such, I can never answer their questions. I can only seek the answers to my own questions. The framing of these issues can be quite subtle, but it tells us everything we need to know about the editorial teams and the journalists behind every single story we see in the media. In reporting, there is no room for opinion. Your own opinions are going to become quite apparent from your framing. And to balance that, you need to be as quiet as possible and to let your subjects speak. Only then can you say that you truly allowed their voices to be heard. As journalists, we need to remember that we have a whole bunch of questions that need to be answered, but we also have a whole bunch of baggage which leads to those questions that we want answers to. We have personal things, our fears come out, our prejudices come out, and if we are not aware of those things, we are not aware of the possible effects that our reporting is going to have. We need to be much more rigorous in the way we report around these issues, and we need to put our own egos aside and cater for those people we are reporting about and put them at the centre of our stories.